The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Well, welcome again, and I'm doing this because it's good, but also because it's something we'll talk about a little bit, but I'm going to invite you to, I know we've been praying through the morning, but let's start our time together in prayer, and if you would join me, let's pray the Lord's Prayer, if you know that, together. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Okay. Well, our session today is character and integrity at work. I'm not going to say character any longer, just because I don't want to say both those words. So we're going to be talking about integrity at work. And when you think of integrity at work, I don't know why this keeps popping up in my mind, but I always think of post-it notes. And do you take post-it notes from the office? And that's an issue of integrity. That's the last time I'll mention that, but we're not necessarily talking just about that this morning. I want to give away a book. I'm going to read a short passage from this later, but I will give this book to, last time I session, I gave the book to the person that traveled the farthest distance, and there was someone from Atlanta. So this one I have queued up for the youngest person in our session. So let's start the bidding. Is anyone under the age of 20 here? Wow, how old are you? Can I see some ID? No, I'm kidding. I read that book about 35 or 40 years ago, and it's one of my favorites. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be reading from that in a second. My email address is on the back, on the bottom. You don't have to look at it. But if you have a follow-up question that doesn't get answered, or you think of something, or you'd like a copy that you can download on your computer of this outline, go ahead and drop me a note. The verse at the top of your outline is what Jesus prayed to his Heavenly Father shortly before his death at the end of his earthly ministry. And I think it speaks to us about the whole idea of work. He prayed, I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. And three simple lessons that, among others, that can come from that passage. The first is a purpose. The only purpose Jesus had, and the only purpose that we're called to, and we can say it in different ways and with different words, is to glorify God, to bring God glory. That's it. The second thing that it suggests is a possibility to complete the work. Now, it says, Jesus prayed, I brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. Jesus, his work was to provide a pathway for forgiveness and redemption for humanity. And he did that. He completed his work. Jesus never preached in Athens or in Rome, so he didn't do everything under the sun, but he completed the work that he was called to do. And you and I can do the same. We can complete the work God has given us to do. Complete doesn't mean that we're perfect. When my oldest boy, David, graduated from high school, we had a party and a celebration with family that weekend. The next day, on that Monday, or maybe even on the Sunday, he pulled out of our driveway in his car. I followed in my car, loaded full of stuff up to Fort Wilderness, that some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with, because he was working there for the summer at the lab up there. And I can remember I pulled out of my driveway to the first stop sign, probably 200-300 feet down the road, and I started to weep. I wept for the whole way up, on and off. And what I was weeping about was as soon as I got to that first intersection, just right down the street from my house, I thought, I'll never see this kid again like I've seen him the last 18 years. And in fact, he's never lived at home for any length of time other than those visits. He's lived in Milwaukee, now he's in Carolina. He won't be coming back to Wisconsin, probably. So I thought, all the things that I didn't do, and I thought, I have failed. I didn't go golfing with him enough. I didn't teach him about home repairs and auto repair. Maybe there's conversations I wish I would have had with him. This, that, and the other thing. And I just thought, oh my gosh. And I just wept. And if you were to ask Dave or my younger boy, Matt, I think they would probably say that, Dad, you really did try to be a good dad. We know you failed. We know you got angry. We know you sinned. You know, I've had to apologize many, many times. But I'm not called to do everything, but I'm called to keep moving forward with lots of things, but with my boys, and keep struggling at being a good dad for them. And I still do that, but I'm not perfect. But there's a sense within the grace of God that we can still feel like we're moving forward and we can complete the work God has given us to do, whether it's at our job or in the community or with our family. So that's a good thing. I mean, it feels good to be able to know that we can complete the task given to God with his help and with his grace. The third thing is personal. Jesus was not called to do all these other things. He was called to do this, and that's what he did. And I think, however you feel about calling, and I don't want to get hung up on words, the calling to a certain job or to the woman you're going to marry or to this event or whatever. But there is a sense where God does lead us, right? He can lead us into situations and opportunities and places and times. And it's personal to us. He doesn't necessarily call everybody to the same thing, right? So that verse and that idea of Jesus completing the work he was called to do is very refreshing and helpful to me. And Jesus, certainly, we'd probably all agree, was a person of integrity. And his integrity flowed from who he was. Jesus, I don't think, focused on all the things that he had to do. I think he focused on developing his relationship with his Father as a human being, and that flowed out in what he did. So when he would go to his office, in a sense, he didn't know so much worry about what he was going to be doing. He just lived out who he was. That's our first. If I could pick three things for you to remember, that's one of them right there. That's at the heart of everything that we'll talk about. What I'd like to do is tell you about 10 or 11 or 12 very, very quick stories that of things that have actually happened in my life. These are real events. I didn't change things to protect the innocent or anything like that, but these are real things that have happened, and they've happened over years. But I'm going to put them all together in a kind of fictitious day, but all the events didn't happen in one day, but they did happen in my life, okay? So here we go. So I get ready in the morning, I fill up my briefcases for my work, whatever I'm going to be doing in my appointments, and I head out, and I live in Fond du Lac, so I head down Highway 41 towards Milwaukee, and guess what? I'm hit Lomira about 10 minutes from my house, and I realize, you know what I forgot? My cell phone. To a guy, it feels like you're half naked, right? You don't have your cell phone. So what do? I got to get some gas, so I stop at a Quick Trip. I go into the Quick Trip, and on my way in, I realize there's a gentleman digging through all the garbage cans, right? He's looking for cans to take to a metal provider and get cash for those cans. And I walk in, and I say, Lord, if he's out there when I get back from inside, I'll give him some money. So I go in and I come out, and guess what? He's not there. So I pull away. I've saved 10 or 20 bucks, whatever I would have given him. And I drive down, and just down the street, there's another gas station. I happen to look over, and guess what? The same gentleman, and I think he was in a wheelchair, was going through the cans in that gas station. What do? I go to a first meeting, and I'm sitting with a couple that own this business, really nice people. And we're talking, we wrap up our business, and we continue to talk. And they start telling me about one of their kids and their family, and some struggles that are really hitting home with them and very difficult. And I can see the emotion come out a little bit, and I ask myself, what do I do with this information? What do I do right now? I go to another meeting and work with some of the owners, and we wrap up our business, and I'm heading out, and I've gotten to know some of the people in the office. And one of the guys comes up to me and says, hey, we've gotten to know each other a little bit. And he says, Dan, I'd like to talk to you in confidence. And I said, fine. And he tells me some things that are going to directly, potentially directly impact the owners in the business. And my relationship is with the owners. But he just told me something in confidence that will affect them. So what do? I go to the mall, doing one of those errands in between that I've given a list of things to do in the morning. So I stop at the mall. I'm coming out of the mall, and there's a gentleman standing at the entrance to the mall holding a sign saying either work for food or need some money or whatever it is. I see that sign as I advance, and I think, what am I going to do? And I go to a nonprofit that my wife and I have given some money to, not tons, but given some money to over the years. And the gentleman there says, you know, thanks for your support. And he says, we put in a new sound system. Thank you so much for that generous gift that you gave to put in the sound system. And I think, it feels nice, but I didn't give you that much money. And I ask myself, what do I say? What do I do with that? I go to another meeting with a couple at their home, sitting at the kitchen table. We wrap up our business, keep talking. They share something similar to what I heard earlier in the day, where they share a concern of their family. One of them lost their job. They've got a concern with one of their kids. What do I do with that? I go to another gas station. I apparently like gas stations. So I go to another gas station, and I'm picking something up to drink or whatever it is, and I'm going to check out, and I hear this scream. This young mother with a young child, the young child slips, hits its head on one of the metal racks, blood all over the place. People are rushing in. They don't need me there. There's plenty of people helping. And I ask myself, what can I do? What do I do? I sometimes in the winter put a shovel in the back because there's a couple people in town that I know, they're older or just or maybe a widow, and they need some help with things from time to time. And I'm thinking, I've got the shovel in the car. It just snowed. Should I go by so-and-so's house to see if they need the walk or the driveway shoveled? And I say, Lord, I do not want to do this today. And I either got to turn right and go by it or turn left. What do I do? I'm walking out of Pick and Save, or I'm walking into Pick and Save, and about 10, 20 yards over here, there's three women pushing a cart full of food with a young child, and it tips over and everything spills out onto the asphalt. And I see another gentleman walking right past them or right by them, and I think, that guy's going to stop. I don't need to go over. And I look over again. The guy just walked like, oh, excuse me. He walked right around and walked right in this door. And I thought to myself, okay, they're over there. I'm heading in. What do I do? And I don't know why this has happened in the last, maybe because I've just been very busy, but the last couple of weeks I thought, I do not feel like calling any of my clients. How can I avoid talking to them by just texting them? And emailing them. And I thought, what does that say and what do I do about that? And then finally, the other day, I'm out with my wife. We go to the movies and we get there really early because she likes to eat her popcorn apparently in the lobby and not in the movies. So we get there early and we're sitting and we've got 30 minutes to kill. And I think, my wife is here. My phone is in my pocket. Who should I communicate with? Those are all real life things, and we've all been through some things like that and choices to make like that. And one of the things that we want to talk about is that integrity has to do with our entire life. You cannot say, I'm going to be a person of integrity at church or in my family or with this situation or that situation or on the job. It's just impossible. You can't do it. If we were ever to say something like, you know, that's really not the person I am, and you're trying to excuse a behavior or a thought or a consequence or whatever it is, I'm really not that type of person. The truth of it is, you are, or I am, that type of person. When I head down this morning, once you hit the Fond du Lac, Dodge County border, right where Quad Graphics is on the west side of 41, every time you drive that, as soon as you cross that county line, the car goes thud, because the asphalt changes. So the question I have for all of us, one of them is, when we walk into work, do we suddenly thud and change? When we go to a Packer game with the guys, do we suddenly thud and change? When we go into Pick and Save or Quick Trip or wherever it is, does our life and demeanor and how we conduct our life change from place to place? And I get it that if you go to the Packer game, you're going to be yelling and screaming. That's fine. And you don't maybe do that at work or at church sometimes or wherever. But who we are as a person, our being, should never change. If someone were to ask Jesus, what do you do for a living, Jesus? He'd say something like, and I'm just really guessing how he'd phrase it. I'm sorry, Jesus. But he'd probably say something like, well, to bring glory to God and to provide redemption for humanity. And he might say it different ways. He probably would. And so then you follow up, good question. And then you say to him, well, tell me about your day. When do you start your day? You start at 8 and end at 5? He'd probably chuckle and say, you know, it's kind of a a whole day, whole life type of thing. And you say, wow, you work beyond 8 and 5, huh? Okay, well. So for Jesus, integrity meant that his inner being, his inner purpose, flowed through his life to every moment of every day that he had breath on this earth. And to be a person of integrity means that who we are as a person on the inside flows to the outside in how we act in everything that we do. And you cannot say, I'm going to be a person of integrity in everything except that. Or I'm going to be a person of integrity here and here, but once I get on the ball field or on the golf course or this, I am a different person. My best friend, Marv, lives in a little town in Minnesota. We visit there often. Our second child, their second child, my second child, were born on the same day. Our families are like this. So we see them a lot. And he's someone that's helped keep me strong through the years, or stronger than I would have been with if I did not have a friend like that. But he lives in this small town. I live in a town of 40-some thousand. Many of you live around here in a town with over 1 million people in the metro area. And Marv can go through the day like this. Goes to Service Motors, bumps into people he knows. Goes to the doctor's office, bumps into people he knows. Goes to church, sees lots of people he knows. Goes to the ball field, goes to the high school basketball game, goes to the soccer match, goes to anywhere in town, and he will know people there. And people he sees at church are the people he sees at a game or on the golf course or on the job. Everywhere he goes, he'll see people that he knows. And so if Marv were to go to this place and act a certain way, and then go over here and act a certain way, and then over here act another different sort of way, the people would be like, wait, Marv, I've seen you here, and I've seen you here, and I've seen you here. What's the deal? You act differently. Everywhere you go, you're a different person. Whereas I can go through a whole day, a whole week, a whole month in Fond du Lac to Kohl's and to Staples and to Applebee's and to everywhere I go, and I could, you know, I could never see anybody that I knew. So I could really lead separate and different lives. Our speaker, the main session speaker, talked about compartmentalizing your life. It's easier to do in a big town. But in a small town, everything's kind of laid bare. And whether we live in a small town or a big town, the integrity of our life should flow through every single area of our life. I read this book about 40 years ago. I love it. He tells a story that I've repeated to other people, and I'm going to just read it word for word. He says this: a brother in South China had a rice field in the middle of the hill. In time of drought, he used a water wheel worked by a treadmill to lift water up from the irrigation stream into his field. His neighbor had 2 rice fields below his, and one night, this man, who had the rice fields below, went up to this field and made a breach in the dividing bank and drained off all his water. When the brother repaired the breach and pumped in more water, his neighbor did the same thing again and again, and this was repeated 3 or 4 times. So you get the picture? Filled up his field at the top, the neighbor came, broke the dam, broke the water, and the water flowed down. So he consulted his brethren, his brothers. I've tried to be patient and not to retaliate, he said, but is it right? After they had prayed together about it, one of them replied, if we only try to do the right thing, surely we are very poor Christians. We have to do something more than what is right. And the brother was much impressed. Now I'll read the end of the story at the end of our time. If you go to the second page, just continuing on, the importance of understanding integrity at work. We're not going to cover every last thing in this outline. I'll skip along some things, but we want to touch on the meaning of integrity. Here's a picture of integrity. Imagine a building with roots that go deep into the earth, up its 10 or 12 or 50 or whatever stories, and every single floor is sound and sturdy. It would not be a very pleasant thing to walk into that building and have someone to say, you know, it's a really nice building, but you really want to avoid the southeast corner of the 10th and 11th floor because, I don't know. Or you don't want to take that particular staircase over there, gentlemen. Don't go. You don't want to hear that. But a building of integrity, like a life of integrity, means through and through it's sturdy. Now, for you and I, we think, well, that's good and well. Does that mean that we have to be perfect? The answer is no. so many of the things that I have thought about, I've related to my boys at different times, and I've said this to them so many times, and I've said it to myself so many times, is that when we, in the context of living a life of integrity, fall short, when we sin, and that does happen, what are you supposed to do with that? Does that mean that we don't have a life of integrity? No, a life of integrity means this, is I know who I am, I know what I'm called to do. When I miss the mark, when I fall short, integrity tells me to just keep doing the right thing, and the right thing to do is say, Lord, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry to the person that I've offended or hurt, and then you start taking the step, next step in sincerity and good faith ahead. What do? Sit and wallow in it? And it's okay to be sad or to be remorseful, to apologize and to work through whatever issues you need to work through, but then to just keep taking the next step forward, do the next right thing, keep moving on. That's a life of integrity. It does not mean perfection, or there'd be no need for forgiveness or grace. So, but to keep moving forward. That's integrity. It's a wholeness, it's a consistency, it's a soundness, it's a virtuousness. Imagine your life like a big pot of cookie dough, chocolate chip cookie dough. When my wife makes that, I think there's only one or two things I want to do. I want to wait till she looks away or goes away. I'm going to take a spoon and I'm going to start eating it because I love that. But when I scoop out some cookie dough, chocolate chip cookie dough, if I just get dough, that's okay. But I want a chocolate chip or two at least in every bit that I scoop out. So if that cookie dough, it has some integrity, it means that it's not just good cookie dough, but there's chocolate chips spread throughout the whole batter, right? That's what a life of integrity is like. It flows from who we are to the outside and flows through everything that we do, every place that we go, every decision that we make. Someone described work as one of three things. It's either your job where you go to get money or benefits, which isn't a bad thing, or it's your career, means personal fulfillment or advancement, or it's a calling where it's inseparable from the rest of your life. On the front page, I forgot to mention, but this ties into that mindset, is you when you think, and I don't want to get into semantics because I know they're just words, but it's just helpful to describe it this way. When you think of your job, you can think of it either in a narrow way, which is fine, or a wide way, which is fine. I'm going to suggest that the wide way is helpful, at least from time to time, to view your job or your work or your life that way. A narrow view of your job means it's just your job. It's where you go to make money, to get benefits. Or maybe you're retired, and what is your job then? It could be taking care of the house, taking care of maybe grandkids, maybe recreating more. Maybe it's doing things volunteering, taking care of someone that has health issues. You might be unemployed and your job is looking for a job, working to get a job. Or you might have health concerns and it limits your ability to get a job. So that's your job. Whatever your job is, it's your job, right? That's a narrow view of your job. But a wide view of your job or your work is your entire life. And so when I describe my day from beginning to end and all those things that happen to me, I know what my job is. I know what I have to do to earn a living, right? But I try desperately and often to think of from the moment I get up to the moment I go to sleep at night, that's my work. And part of it I get paid for. But my work is everything. So when I get home at night, I think, if there's something to do, I'm going to do it. If there's something I can help, I'm going to try to do that. But everything that I do is work. And work is a good thing. Work has a bad rap. But work is a good thing. And when I view my entire life as work, there's never a moment where I'm off of work, but it's not a mindset that is burdensome either. It kind of frees me up. It's my whole life. It's not just this little part. And when I focus on just one part being more important than the rest, or I've got to live a certain way here and then transition to live a different way here, it's just a mess. But when it's the whole thing, it's kind of freeing. Because I just go from moment to moment to situation to opportunity and just try to live the same, be the same that flows out into actions. And I think, although that's a struggle and I'm imperfect like the rest of us, I think that's the mindset that Jesus must have had, right? He didn't get up and say, well, I got 2 hours before I start my day, go to the office at 8, be done by 5, and then the rest of the day is mine. I don't think he lived like that. And I bet he laughed. And I bet he enjoyed walks and other things too. So it wasn't burdensome. There's a verse at the bottom of that first or second page. David shepherded them with integrity of heart, that's on the inside, and with skillful hands on the outside. There's a verse in 1 Peter that talks about holiness, and we talk about integrity in work, and it says this: therefore, prepare your minds for action, be self-controlled, set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy because I am holy. Holiness always flows from who we are on the inside and then leads to action. There's a couple quotes there. The first from Paul Tournier, Swiss physician and author, and he says, the die is cast. That which I have been able to do, to learn, or to acquire is gradually losing its value. The doing and the having are giving way to the being. And he wrote that later in life, and there will be a time in all our lives where the ability to do and to learn and to acquire starts to wane away. And the only thing we're left with is being. And whether that's in the last moments of life or the last days or years of life, our activity will slow down. I mean, I'm 56, I think, and I notice that now a little bit. Just the slowing of my body, right? And I may not be the guy that runs up and down the ladder, you know, 20 times. I've got all that energy, but I'm smart enough now in my old age to know all the tools I need to take up rather than, oh, I need that and up and down. So there's some wisdom in that. But life changes, right? Life changes. And the author was saying, we need to focus more and more on the being on the early end of our life and let that flow into the doing and not wait until we have to slow down physically or mentally at the end of life or nearing the end or the later years of life. When I got to 50, I didn't have a breakdown of any kind, but I remember saying to my boys, you know, I've lived longer now than I have years probably left. And those moments, when you think about that, are begin to be life-changing. Or when the gentleman this morning, Stu, was it? Spoke this morning, not Stu, who was Crawford. When he mentioned that the investment you make on your grandchildren is really an investment that you'll never see the fruit of in this lifetime, which is a powerful statement. Another great quote by Francis Schaeffer said, this inward area, this being, this inward area is the first place of loss of true spirituality. The outward is always just a result of this. So if you focus on this, you'll get really tired really fast and something will go wrong, I promise you that. If you focus on the being, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, if you focus on this, this is just a natural result of what goes on down here. And so if you were to ever say, that's really not the person I am, I really don't act that way, well, guess what? You do act that way, and I act that way. But when we change from the inside, it makes the outward action and activity different. I mentioned this already, but grace is always involved in our life. And when sin entered the world, it changed work, it changed how we view our job and other things in life, and it became more difficult. And humility is acknowledging the impact of sin and our need for grace. And integrity, like I mentioned before, allows for forgiveness. It allows for redemption, even between human beings. So being a person of integrity does not imply that we are perfect. It probably suggests that we need to be humble about who we are and be gracious towards to others. Does that make sense? Okay. On that one page that starts at the top, danger of separating corporate and individual calling, think of it this way. All of us are called as followers of Christ to have one purpose, which is to glorify God, all of us. And no matter where you live or where you work and whatever else you do, we all go different directions. But there's one thing that binds us together, and that's our purpose, to glorify God, to glorify God. So we can go to any place, and glorifying God is our main concern. It doesn't mean that we can't enjoy a Packer game or a golf game. We can do that. But in the midst of however we conduct ourselves and whatever we say, whatever we do, our purpose is to glorify God. Sometimes, and I've worked in different situations, it's easy to think. Sometimes it may be just a day or a week that you have that's just a bad day or a bad week or month, or just a mindset that you've had for a long time where you walk into work, walk into your job, and you think, you know, this is where I get my paycheck, or this is where I get my fulfillment, or this is where I'm going to get advancement in my career. But what goes on here stays here, and the rest of my world is different. But when I walk in those doors of the office, I'm a different human being. For whatever reason, I'm just different there than anywhere else. And there's a danger in separating those two, because what it says is we're not really living a life of integrity. We are focusing on forgetting all of this and doing whatever we need or want to do to make our job what we want our job to be. And that's dangerous. And it suggests a couple things. One is that we might have an improper view of a couple things. One is work. That we can really separate. And for you, it might not be work. It might be hanging out with the guys at the card game or the golf course. So it could relate to different things. But it suggests that we can separate our life and who we are in different areas of our life. And that's just not possible. It'll catch up with us. Or it suggests that we can split our being, or suggest that God really doesn't care about what I do at the office or those people as much as all the other areas of life. And that's not a true view of things. It might be simply that we just reject that opportunity. We just don't want to deal with living that way in the office. It's just easier just to not to do anything. Society glorifies or does the reverse of work. I'll give an example. It's very easy to see from whether it be television shows or movies or advertisements or things you read in the media or things that are on your phone, that work can be a place where we get our glory, right? We have that position. We earn that amount of money. We can drive that type of car. We can have these type of clothes. We can do this or we can do that. And society can say, your status in the world, whether it's your car or your home or your bank account, whatever it is how much you have, how much you can acquire, how much you can possess. And glory to you, boy, you've made it. Or that's the goal. Or it can say, on the flip side, on the very opposite side, we get sometimes the pictures of work, just get through the work day, and then you have the rest of your life, right? Work is that grind, that thing that you go to and you get done, and then when you walk out of the office doors, your life begins then, right? And you kind of say, my job is just that thing I gotta do. Whether you make $1 million or you make whatever you make, it's just that other thing I got to do, but when I get out of this, then I can go enjoy the rest of my life. And that's when life really starts, because this does not have anything to do with life. This just provides maybe the income so I can do all these other things which are far more important than that. And that's not a good view of work either, and that gets old. And then we talked about compartmentalizing life in the big town and the little town, how you can separate things out. It's not so easy to do in a small town, a larger, and it's easier to have those compartmentalizations in a bigger town. And what happens then is we begin to think differently and act differently about the people in our lives at work. We can say those fellow workers are just fellow workers. We may not even think that way, but we live that way. They're just fellow workers. Or the work environment is really not a place where grace can be something that we either share by our life, by our speech, or by our behavior. The next page talks about a few issues I'll just touch on real briefly. Issues potentially impacting integrity on the job. One is technology. There's a quote by Bonhoeffer there that's about 80 years old. He said, technology is the power with which the earth seizes hold of humankind and masters it. When you go to the movies, when you go to the grocery store, when you go any place, a Packer game, and you see people walking around, and this is just one little example like this, this is a very impersonal thing. It might connect it to other people, but why are kids these days more interested in texting than talking? And I'm not making a judgment. They can both be good, right? But these things make us impersonal. And the danger, the most serious danger, is not that it makes us impersonal with our family or I do this instead of talking to my wife, is that it makes us impersonal with God. Because every time we have a spare moment, what do some of us want to do? Be on the computer, be on this, and the ability to throw it down and to put it away is a very difficult thing. So technology, does it seize us and seek control of us? You bet it does. in a whole variety of ways. And there's a lot of other issues there, wealth, poverty, etc. If you want to know about that soccer illustration on the back end, it's really kind of an interesting, very, very interesting thing. The last thing I'd like to mention on the last page, some practical steps to build integrity, and I'll close with an illustration or two. The best thing we can do to build integrity is to add to our knowledge of God. When you discover more and more the depth of God's love and grace that he's given to you and given to me, we tend to be more gracious and loving to the people that we work with on the job and the rest of our life as well. So if you do not focus on a list of things to do, focus on adding to your knowledge and growing deeper and deeper in the knowledge of God. Tozer's quote there, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. I believe that 100%. 100%. Create patterns of godliness. A disciplined day starts the night before. Sometimes I read a psalm a day. I've told my kids for decades, read a psalm a day for the rest of your life. You'll change your life. I put out this, my Bible on the countertop before I go up to bed at night, and I turn to the psalm that I'm going to read in the morning. Today it was Psalm 6. Tomorrow will be Psalm 7. I just follow the days of the month and keep adding 30 to it. And this will change your life. For men especially, because the psalms are songs that speak to the heart and of the mind. It conveys truth, God's discipline, his love, and his care for you. And that's a missing element to many of a man's experience. And this, you cannot read through the psalms and not get emotional about your relationship with God, and that's okay. But it continually speaks to our heart. So I would encourage you to think about that. One of the things that I do every morning, and that's why I had us read say the Lord's Prayer together, a regular prayer that you memorize, so that you don't have to think every day, well, who do I pray for? What do I pray for? I start every day, and it's changed over the years. I say something like this: Lord, thank you for this day. I love you. Thank you for the love that flows from your holiness into my life. And I pray your blessing upon Sandy, and I go through a list of people specifically that I just say, Lord, bless them. And sometimes I say it out loud so I can hear myself, so I know that if I'm being insincere or just going through the motions. And then I will say, and Satan, we stand against you today. Man does not live on bread alone, but in every word that comes from the mouth of God. And it is written that he has crushed your head, and it is finished, and we are redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I'm getting a little emotional. Redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, so be gone this day from Sandy. And I list through all those people again. And some missionaries that we support, and some business owners that I know, and people that have response, I do that. And then I go back and I start with my wife again over the course of the day and remember those people in prayer for things that are going on in their life. But because I've memorized even that stuff, I don't have to sit and struggle with what I'm praying for. I know what I'm praying for, and it changes from day to day what I might be praying for them. But I start my day with that, and I get through it. And there's times I'm driving to an appointment, I say, I haven't prayed yet today. And I can do it while I'm driving along. And sometimes then I'll say it out loud so that I can hear myself, make sure that I'm being sincere about it. But amongst that thing and that thing, regular prayer and Bible reading. Memorize prayer, something that you memorize to help you through. The last couple of things at the end is one of the things we need to do is choose to live by faith, to believe that our work is important, to act and to pray. If you pray and ask God for opportunities to let your faith show up at the workplace, be careful, because he'll show you places. And if you're being sensitive to him, he will show you opportunities. And maybe it's to utter a silent prayer that no one ever will know that you prayed for this fellow worker that has a need or a crisis. Maybe it'll be a moment where you need to open your mouth and offer some encouragement to someone, or to pull someone aside at some point and say, would you mind if I pray for you? Or to say, you know, I'll keep you in prayer, and to follow up and ask. But there'll be opportunities for you to do that. And it could be in every area of your life, even at your job. But trusting God is so important. Two last things. I'm just going to make this up, but let's say you're a business owner and you've got 20 people or 200 people working for you. And you are working through the day. You can do whatever you want because you run the place, right? And you find out that someone has an illness, one of your employees, and they are in the hospital and it's serious. Or it's, whether it's short-term, long-term, I don't know, but it's serious. So you think, oh, the last place I want to be is a hospital. I would agree with that. I don't want to go to the hospital. I've got all this work to do. You're faced with a decision about trusting God, right? You either have to trust God that you can stay and get your work done and your prayer will have some influence and help that person in the hospital, or you can say, Lord, I'll trust you that all this stuff will get done, whether it be me coming in later or what, It'll get done or taken care of. I'm going to that hospital because that's where you want me to be. And I would simply encourage us to listen to the voice of God and ask yourself, Lord, I can go, and that could be good. I can stay, and that would be good. What do you want me to do? And listen and feel that sense of God's presence in your being and say, what do I feel at peace about? One of my favorite verses is listed there. It talks about the good spirit leading us on level ground. The next verse in the New Testament that's written after that says that Paul went to the city of Troas to preach the gospel because God had opened a door for him. And you know what Paul did? He left because he had no peace. So God opened the door to preach the gospel. Paul could have gone in and preached. And what did he do? He left. Because why? He had no peace of heart. So he left. So peace, doing God's work doesn't mean you rush in and do everything. You have to ask the question, Lord, what do you want me to do right now? What do I want to do a quick trip when I see that situation that I can't really help with? Is there something you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Here's the last part of that story. The brother was much impressed. The next morning, he pumped water for the two fields below, and in the afternoon pumped water for his own field. After that, the water stayed in his field. His neighbor was so amazed at his action that he began to inquire of the reason why the guy acted like that, right? And in the course of time, he too became a Christian. That little soccer thing, and I'll end with this. Statistics have shown that the best place to kick a penalty kick is where? Right down the middle. That's the best place to kick it. Do you know why? Because the goalie knows that it's right down the middle too, but the goalie doesn't want to act stupid or look stupid and feels like he's got to go make a choice one way or another, because who's going to be stupid enough to kick it right at the goalie because the goalie's standing there? But that kicker should know that the goalie's probably going to move, but he's not going to be stupid enough to think, I'm going to kick it right at the goalie, because the rest of the world, and I don't believe statistics, he might say, who knows, but he doesn't choose to kick it right at the goalie because he doesn't believe, he doesn't want to look dumb or awkward, right? So he kicks it to one of the corners, and guess what? He'd have a better chance if he just kicked it straight, and the goalie would be better at stopping it if the guy just stood there. But no one does those things. Do you know why? Because they have no peace about it. Like, just be dumb. It'd be awkward. And if we live a life of integrity in any of those situations, let alone the job, we will come to that place where we say, this does not feel right. It may not look right. I'm going to feel awkward. I'm going to feel vulnerable. I guess I'd have to trust God to protect me or to lead me. And that's what it comes down to. Is if we live that way in work and other situations, we will get to the point where we feel uncomfortable and awkward, and then we have to say, Lord, where's your peace? And am I willing to trust you? Am I willing to trust you? Thanks for coming. We won't end in prayer. You'll be praying all day, right? But thanks for coming. If you have a question or whatnot, I'll be here or email me it, but I'd be happy to help out or answer it. So have a good day.